We're loaded up and ready to roll.
I love beef and sports.
Greeny, we doing this again?
Yes.
Test, 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 test.
Is Mike Greenberg wearing pants?
All I can say is this. Wouldn't you like to know?
It matters to me.
Bruh, y'all be working my nerves, dog.
What did I do?
I don't feel like they like each other.
I don't want to fight with you.
What did I say?
We fight enough.
Can I mute Neek? At what point did I do something to offend you?
I am confused, and I'm going to need to see how this thing plays out.
And that leaves one superly accomplished quarterback, which is not good English.
Don't make me break out of the thesaurus. There's a few people that I might not like covering professional sports because they may have been a-holes along the way.
The best thing about rivalries is that 30 years later, they're still not over. Here's the Hall of Famer Isaiah Thomas.
Being left off the dream team, that's a big hole in my resume.
Last night, Darryl Austin became an uncle. The Wentzes had their baby girl.
Who had the baby girl?
The Wentzes, Carson Wentz.
I love it, Mr. T. Go hard.
Dan, you must be so proud.
Dropping tan ball.
It's been a really fun week, and I just can't tell you what a privilege it is for us to get a chance to be here with you through all of this and spend 2 hours every morning talking about sports. I hope it's among the best 2 hours of your day. It certainly is for all of us involved. We're delighted that you were here. And on this Friday, we are jam-packed. So let's roll hour number two of Get Up coming your way right now, because it's time to get up with Aaron Rodgers. We've got all the details on the decisions from Green Bay. Wait until you hear why they did what they did in the draft. Then LeBron with a strong statement about the NBA's return. We'll ask Michael Wilbon what his words really mean. And then, if Michael Jordan played today, how many points a game would he score? We've got the pieces in place for the great generational debate. Let's get up, starting right now. And we begin the hour with Get Up and Go, all the news from the sports world. It starts with this. It's not great. The 2020 Little League World Series was canceled yesterday as a result of the coronavirus pandemic. It's a terrible shame. The event had been held every August since 1947, had never been canceled before. More optimistic news from NASCAR, where they announced that they will resume their season without fans starting May 17th at Darlington Raceway in South Carolina. From there, NASCAR plans on holding seven total races over an 11-day span. Hockey, NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman says the league is considering starting next season as late as December as it considers all options to finish the current season, while no firm timeline or target dates have been established. And the Chiefs make the easy decision to pick up the fifth-year option on Patrick Mahomes' contract. While they've said they plan on re-signing him to a long-term deal, he may not have to wait until next year for that extension. He is quite simply the best player in the world. Meanwhile, let's talk about another guy who has been the best player in the world. The fallout continues from the Packers' surprising selection of quarterback Jordan Love in the first round of the draft last week, while they still have that guy on their roster. Our Packers reporter Rob Domofsky has an article out this morning about the details, and it's an interesting read, to say the very least. And I'll give you a little taste of it here in our required reading this morning. He's got the insight on why they did what they did. He writes, so even with the obvious holes on the offense, topped by the lack of a proven number two receiver behind Devontae Adams, Gutekunst, that's the GM, admittedly weighed the short-term and long-term gains and believed the better value was in the long-term with Love, whether LaFleur liked it or not. A first-round quarterback, in theory, wouldn't help LaFleur get over the hump one iota. But how could a young coach fight it? The answer, he couldn't or he didn't. Here's more from Rob himself earlier this morning on Get Up.
I'm told the Packers loved the top, the very top of the receiver class. But the only one they had any realistic shot at was LSU's Justin Jefferson. But once he went off the board to the Vikings at number 22, that's when Gutekunst really zeroed in on Love. The more he watched him, the more he thought he had the potential, Greeny, to be a rare combination of Brett Favre's gunslinging, Aaron Rodgers' intelligence, and a Patrick Mahomes-like athleticism.
So that obviously is quite the remarkable comparison to be making. And Damian Woody and Marcus back here. D. Wood, I've not had you on all week, so I've not had a chance to get your reaction. What do you make, just big picture, especially with the information we just picked up this morning, about the way this thing is handled and the way it's going to go in Green Bay?
Well, first of all, when I watched the draft, I was shocked. I think I was stunned just like everyone else. You're talking about Aaron Rodgers, albeit his play has been slipping the past couple of years. This team was in the NFC Championship game. So you think that projecting forward, okay, the Green Bay Packers need receivers. Help this man out towards the end of his career, get him some receivers. And for them to pick Jordan Love, and I'm not trying to disparage Jordan Love at all, because I think he is a good prospect, but Aaron Rodgers, he just signed an extension. So you go out as a GM and you get Jordan Love. And to me, this signals the end. The clock is ticking on Aaron Rodgers right now. Yeah. He might have 2020. And then after that, I think he could be gone. I think the Packers will swallow up that $31 million cap hit in 2021 because you can't afford to waste this rookie contract.
That's quite a meal to swallow there, D-Wood. Even you might walk away from the table at some point with the amount of money they would have to eat in order to make that happen. So, Marcus, that's the point I keep trying to make through this, is that this thing may not end well, but it's also not going to end soon. So what's it going to be like now?
Gee, it's a bad situation. Like, I mean, we can talk about this in so many varying ways, and we can get deep down in the football and talk about what this means on the field. But we know the most important player in the locker room, especially when he's being considered one of the greatest of all time in Aaron Rodgers. We know that this dynamic is different than most other locker rooms that exist. You have three or four guys in the NFL at quarterback that you don't want to piss off. You don't want to disgruntle. We saw what happened with Tom Brady. Not saying that his wasn't played out publicly, but obviously him leaving for Tampa had something to do with the relationship. We talked about that for months. We look at this situation with Green Bay. It's not good for Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay to have a good working relationship based on what they did. Now, if there's something going on behind the scenes that we don't know about and they feel like they have the talent, or Aaron Rodgers feels like his wide receiving core needs more time and they can be really, really good this year, that's a different conversation. But the fact that you drafted a quarterback to tell Aaron Rodgers and signal to him that this is almost over for you in Green Bay is not going to sit well when you still need Aaron Rodgers to win games. So it's one of those age old things we see in sports where the clock is ticking and it happens faster than the guy think it's going to happen. And now the relationship will be soured because of that. That's just the bottom line. It will be a sour relationship.
Yes. And for both of you guys, I've also had some more time to think about. One of the things Rob Domofsky told us earlier was that as the draft went on, a record 36 receivers were taken. They never took a single one. And that's because all the guys they liked got taken ahead of them. Denzel Mims, who the Jets drafted, went three picks ahead of them. Well, somehow, Marcus, they prioritized taking Love enough to move aggressively, to trade up and get him. But they didn't prioritize the receiver enough to move aggressively, trade up and get him. That's another thing that just sort of I've been thinking about since Domofsky said it earlier.
Well, they brought in Funchess. They have St. Brown and Valdez-Scantling in that receiver room along with Devontae. Some of those guys may develop. Funchess has had some up and down moments to get into the football part. But, gee, another thing I want to say. All of these guys that he said he thought Jordan Love was, why the hell he ain't going to take him at the first pick? If I got a mix of all of those people, I'm going to take him at the first pick in the quarterback. And he wouldn't have ever got to Green Bay if everybody else would have thought he was that damn good.
That's exactly right. Damian, I need a one-word answer. Yeah, who will win? Who is the favorite right now in the NFC North going into this season?
Green Bay.
Okay, so it's still the Packers. Okay, fair enough. So we'll leave it there for the moment. We'll do more on this as we go. But I got another quarterback situation for you guys that I want to get into, and that is the one surrounding Andy Dalton. The Bengals released him yesterday, right during our show is when that news came across. He's a 9-year veteran, and you figure he should be in high demand amongst quarterback needy teams. Could one of those be the Patriots? Well, let me bring in Mike Reese with a smile on my face, who covers the Pats, and I smile because, Mike, I'm going to talk you into signing a quarterback one way or the other if it's the last thing I do. I've been trying to push Cam Newton on you. You have no interest in that. How about Andy Dalton in New England?
Well, Greeny, everyone I talk to around the Patriots, it really comes back to two words, Jarrett Stidham. They are really intrigued to see what he can do. So specific to Andy Dalton, I didn't get any sense from anyone around the Patriots that when he became available yesterday, that there was an aggressive push to sort of see where that would lead. If anything, it would be a conversation of due diligence and really asking the question, how would bringing in a player like Dalton supplement what they have in Stidham, not supplant him? And that's knowing they also have veteran Brian Hoyer in the room, who they really feel comfortable with as well.
So I guess for those who have not been watching all week and have not heard you all week long, it really sounds like they've made a decision, a firm decision, because if Cam's available and they're not biting, and if Dalton's available, they're not biting, they've made the decision. Their starting quarterback this year is going to be Jarrett Stidham.
Well, Greeny, I will say this. They're not going to say that because, one, they don't want to put the pressure on him. It's only his second year. And, two, there is still a blind spot there for the Patriots. Until a quarterback actually goes out and does it, you do need to protect yourself. And so I think the way they look at it is every decision that they're going to make is to try to put Stidham in the best position to succeed, and they protect themselves with the veteran insurance policy behind him in Brian Hoyer.
All right, Mike Reese, outstanding. Have a great weekend, my man. Great to see you, as always. I bring my guys back here. D. Wood, you began your career playing there at the beginning of Brady. Now they're at the beginning of whatever comes next. So with the players that are available now, Andy Dalton, Cam Newton, do you believe the Patriots should be interested in them?
Well, I mean, theoretically, you would think so. But I just think that the Patriots are a different model than any other organization in the National Football League. Their culture. I think the one thing that's helping Jarrett Stidham is the fact that he was there last year watching Tom Brady, saw everything. He knows the Patriot way. And with this truncated offseason, it just doesn't make sense, even for a veteran guy to be in that position. So I just don't see the Patriots signing either one of those guys.
Marcus, should they sign Andy Dalton?
Yes, they should. And they should because, geez, listen, this has been to Woody's point. The Patriots do a better job of protecting their quarterback than anybody in the NFL. We've seen that in recent history. Andy Dalton could possibly go to New England and win. Andy Dalton has been to the playoffs in Cincinnati. So it's not like Andy Dalton hasn't played good football throughout a 9-year career that he's had. He's been with the organization, got stale. Obviously, Joe Burrow came in. They thought it was an upgrade over him. But when you look at how New England has built themselves and built their team, you don't need a superstar quarterback to come in. But if I could get a guy with 9 years of experience compared to a guy that's never played a down in significant games, you damn right I'm going to sign him. So, yes, New England should sign Andy Dalton, with no question.
I guess one of the things I see people wondering, Damien Woody, just how good is Andy Dalton?
Well, listen, I think Andy Dalton is an average quarterback at best at this point, at this juncture in his career. Now, albeit he played with the Cincinnati Bengals organization that's nowhere near on par with the Patriots, but listen, if we're going to go just by off of experience, he has a plethora of experience compared to Jarrett Stidham. But my whole point is, it's the culture. It's being in that building that gives Jarrett Stidham the advantage. And I think the Patriots, the fact that they're strapped by the salary cap and that Jarrett Stidham has been in this organization, I think the Patriots are good going forward with Jarrett Stidham as the starting quarterback.
All right, and then one last thing I would like to say, because everyone on Twitter is saying it. Just put that one shot back up there, if you would, Kalen, of Damien Woody, because everyone is saying it. Of all the people at ESPN, no one has a better home setup than Damien Woody does. He's holding Chariot Racing later today after he's finished with all of his appearances on television. Right, Marcus? I mean, is there anything in the world like where Damien Woody is sitting right now?
Gee, we don't have to go to the Coliseum. We can just go to Woody's house.
But you're sitting in front of a brick wall, and Damien Woody is sitting like...
Are you not entertained?
That's quite a juxtaposition from you two fellas. All right, let me take a break here. I got lots more to do in this hour. Coming up, would Michael Jordan still have been as great? Would he be even better if he played in the NBA today? Jalen and Michael Wilbon will answer that question coming up. And one powerful college commissioner talked confidently about playing this upcoming season. But it was the way they may play that will fascinate you. And you will hear it next. Get Up on ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We are back on Get Up. Let's run the hurry up here with some NFL stories. Bobby Carpenter, what should the Patriots be doing at quarterback right now?
Well, Bill Belichick evaluates quarterbacks a little bit differently, and I think that he's looking at his roster saying, Cam Newton's out there, Andy Dalton's out there. We don't need these guys. We've got Jared Stidham. I like what he's done. I know what his upside is. I know what his downside is. And also, you look around the NFL. Russell Wilson, third-round draft pick. Dak Prescott, fourth-round draft pick. And not to mention, they had Tom Brady, who was a sixth-round draft pick. So I don't think Bill's getting caught up in having a big name. He's confident with who he has.
Fair. Swagoo, the Seahawks need an edge rusher. Jadeveon Clowney is still out there. What gives?
Re-sign Jadeveon Clowney. Obviously, they talked early about his numbers being too high as far as what he wanted to be compensated, but I'm sure that they can work out a deal. This free agency will humble you, G, and I think Jadeveon Clowney is getting a taste of that. I think he'll end up back in Seattle.
And finally, Bobby, once and for all, how concerned should Packers fans be about their receivers?
Well, they've got Devontae Adams. He's fantastic. No one's questioning that. He almost sold 45% of the catches in only 12 games. But then you've got Lazard. You have Valdez-Scantling. You need to figure out something else. I think they're trying to plug that hole with A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones. Just run the ball more and forget the rest of the wide receivers. That's what it looks like they're doing in Green Bay.
Yeah, that's might have been what they meant when they said take the ball out of Aaron's hands a little bit. Or the Aaron who is the quarterback as opposed to the Aaron who is the running back. Guys, stay with me because I want to do this conversation here because to me this is maybe the most interesting thing going on in sports right now. College football this coming year very much up on the air or in the air. Yesterday on the radio in Jacksonville, the SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey suggested that this thing could get started very differently in different places. Listen to what he said.
There is room for different conferences to make different decisions, but we're all interconnected. When we're playing basketball tournaments, there's no connection. We're all in our arenas playing each other. And so the hypotheticals that play out if different decisions are made or where those increments come in. If there's a couple of programs that aren't able, does that stop everyone? I'm not sure it does, but the ability for us to stay connected, I think, will remain important.
Okay, and so Laura's back here. And again, Laura, you've talked to so many people about this over the last few weeks because we've been talking about it here. What are you hearing from most people about the possibility of some playing football and others not?
Look, I think that's going to be a worst case scenario type situation. And as you heard the commissioner right there, Greg Sankey, say, ultimately, we're trying to stay connected here. They're still going to reevaluate everything at the end of this month, May, early June, and see where the country is. See if it is feasible to get players back on campus sometime around mid-July. But here's what I think is really interesting. When it comes to the lack of connection here already, guys, we are seeing some of these schools come out and say, oh, yeah, we're going to have students on campus in fall. We're prepared for football. We're going to plan to play it. Nobody really knows one way or the other, but I think some of these schools are coming out and saying these things so that it would be more likely to get student athletes on campus. As we all know, the football players come to campus before the students anyway. So let's say we're talking about a university that says they're going to have students on campus in fall when that semester begins. They may be already saying that just to see if they can go ahead and start that process of getting the football players back on campus. I'm not saying that football fuels everything, but basically football fuels everything here. And I think there's a major point to look at when you look around the country of some of these individual schools already making these statements that are not, you know, said by an actual conference. These are schools coming out on their own saying this, which is why what the commissioner just talked about in that radio show could be more likely than we think.
I've thought that too. It's a horribly skeptical way to look at it, or cynical way, but I actually agree with you. I've had that thought as well. Bobby, you played at Ohio State. You host a show in Columbus, Ohio, so you're as connected to the Big Ten as anyone could be. I know the politics there a little bit as well. That conference sticks together. They pride themselves on sticking together. Could you see some of the schools going on and playing if not all of them can?
you know, that's the big question. You could see conferences doing it, one conference and maybe not another. You would think the Big Ten would all stick together. And that's the inclination that I've always had and I've always believed. But then I started thinking, Greeny, you have Maryland, one of the charter members of the ACC, now in the Big Ten. You had Texas A&M, Texas's longtime in-state rival. Now they're not in the same conference. They're in the SEC. Why? Because it's about money. And these guys are all a team. When it's good for everybody, when it's good to be a team, that's convenient. Marcus and I were on a team. We were defensive players in Dallas. We would go to dinners together. But I'll tell you this, I didn't put my fork on his plate and try to steal some of his steak, because that would have been the worst decision I made. So it's convenient for these schools to stick together when it works for them monetarily. If this doesn't work, I think you might begin to see a little bit of a schism in some of these conferences where some schools know they need to play and they might leave others behind.
What do you think, Swaggo?
Gee, take a second and think about the impact of what we're talking about. This, in a certain way, has forced the hand of the NCAA to pay attention to the fact that these schools and these conferences can make decisions unbeknownst to them and do things because of what's happening right now. It's forcing us to have a new conversation about college sports. The second thing is, you look at the economic impact of Laura and I being in the SEC, and I'm sure it's relatable to Bobby as well, being in Ohio. The economic impact of people outside of the school based on football season happening. The places and the things and the people that benefit off of this, so many industries that benefit off of this. This is going to impact everything about those states, about those towns, about those cities. So we're not just talking about getting the student athletes back to play football.
Yeah.
We're also talking about a whole industry around football, around these players being there and playing games that will suffer or either benefit from what they decide to do.
I have one more question for Laura, and I will grant ahead of time. It might be impossible to answer right now. But this is a sport that is made up of so many different entities, and so many different people have authority over their little piece of it. Ultimately, who will make these decisions? I mean, someone has to make these calls. Who has the authority to make them when all is said and done?
I want to say that right now it seems like it would be the actual states, like the governments of each state, and they're going to take a cue from that. I do think that commissioners will be able to preside over their conferences and make specific conference decisions, but who knows here? At the end of the day, what I do think is becoming more and more apparent is this will not be the NCAA's sole decision. They will advise in this, and these meetings that are happening right now every day obviously include the NCAA, but I don't think that this is just coming from them. It's going to be decided in each conference. One other thing too, really quickly, guys, when you think about revenue generated in a conference, the revenue is shared. So even if you had a couple of schools that could not play because their states were not able to be safe for their players, you might still see these conferences say either way, they're going to get money from the other teams playing.
Yes, that's an interesting point. The Big Ten is spread out over 11 states. The SEC is spread out over 11 states. There's a lot of decisions still to come. All right, we will do much more on this as we go. But coming up next, 1998 nearly did not end in a title run for the Bulls. Jalen Rose and Michael Wilbon will tell us why Michael needed all the help he could get to accomplish the ultimate goal. Don't miss that conversation. Next, Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Giveback, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Looking forward to it Sunday night. The Last Dance, brought to you by Facebook. The wait is almost over for the next two installments, debuting Sunday night. Here's a sneak preview of what to expect as Michael Jordan blames Horace Grant for leaking team information.
Jerry invited me to come to his room, and he had earmarked about 25 different quotations in the book. And he wanted me to sit and listen to him while he read them. And that started with, like, you know, who do you think could do this? Were you part of this?
While the early reports have brought a flurry of denials, players giving out sensitive information to the press is one surefire way to cause a division within the team.
I didn't contribute to that.
And that was Horace. He was telling everything that was happening within the group.
You know, as we started winning championships, and everybody talked about Michael, and then everybody talked about everybody else, I mean, that really pissed off Horace. He felt slighted. He was in Michael's shadow.
Another great weekend is coming your way with these Last Dance episodes. Jalen is back, and we are so thrilled that Michael Wilbon has chosen to get up early for us this morning and come on here today. And, of course, you see Michael all over these Last Dance episodes. Thank you for doing this, Mike. And I want to start with you. There's a lot of things I've earmarked that I want to get in this conversation. The first is, let's put a ribbon on the Isaiah Thomas piece, because that was obviously the most important stuff that came out of last week. He was very candid earlier this week with us. You've spoken to him about this. Tell us about your conversations with Isaiah.
Well, listen, I Greeny, you know this. You and Jalen know this. I've known Isaiah Thomas. I knew him when he didn't know me. I wasn't good enough on the basketball court as a kid for Isaiah to know me. But I knew him. We went to rival Catholic schools in Chicago. I've known him since he was, 13, 14 years old. And he would score about 40 points on my brother. So I've known Isaiah forever. So there's a existing relationship there. And I called him to really talk about something that we'll get into a little bit later, I think, about his statements the other day that LeBron and KD, because of just the evolution of athleticism, would have dominated the 80s and 90s. And I called him not to talk about, not to just kill the dead horse about the handshake and the dream team. Because people are just now getting into that maybe for themselves. They're just now hearing it for the first time. They're being reminded of it. I lived this originally, covering it for the Washington Post. But I called Isaiah to say there's no one now who would have dominated the 80s and the 90s. No one. Not even as great as KD and LeBron are. They wouldn't have dominated his Pistons, Michael's Bulls, the Celtics, the Lakers. They're not dominating anybody back then. Those athleticism, evolution or not. So we talked about that. We talked about a lot of stuff. And it wasn't even a sort of on the record conversation for the purpose of an interview. Just talking, and I wanted to talk to him, and we got into some of the other stuff, but that was sort of the flashpoint that day. And Isaiah's been in the news, and I'm sure without having asked him, and Jalen, I'm not sure if you've talked to him, but I'm sure it's just got to be unpleasant for him to have to relive some of this stuff in which people were very critical of him. And it wasn't just the Bulls. People act like, oh, in Chicago and the Bulls and Michael, and they hate Isaiah and the Pistons. Isaiah had his battles in Boston with the Celtics and in L.A. with the Lakers before they even got to the best part of the Bulls. So there's so much, Greeny, to unpack, as you just suggested. That's where our conversation started, with me saying, all right, you can scream at me if you want, but I don't want to hear this stuff about anybody, including LeBron and KD, dominating the 80s and the 90s. I'm not buying any of that. We had a pleasant conversation about that.
Well, so that's the generational debate. So, Jalen, let's take the other side of it for the moment. Tell Michael what you told our audience earlier this morning. If Michael Jordan played now, the way the game is officiated and the way the game is played, what do you think his numbers would look like?
So, two unstoppable forces in the history of the NBA and guys that have their basically own record book are Wilt Chamberlain and Michael Jordan. Wilt averaged 50 points and 25 rebounds in the season, youngsters. And he played every minute and played 40. He played every minute of every game. Michael Jordan would have been the modern day version of that. In an era of physicality, in an era where the players were just larger out on the floor. Today, we're playing a lot of small ball. Players that were wings in high school are playing power forwards in the NBA. Okay, and the body types are different. James Harden is an amazing three-point shooter and scorer, and he's averaging late 30s. Michael Jordan was doing that in the 80s. I say he gets at least one more basket per quarter and one free throw attempt per quarter and gets around 47.5 points today. Because he's also a dominant defensive player that'll be getting steals, that'll be getting blocks, that'll be catching lobs, that'll be scoring in transition. That's my number, Wilby. What do you think?
I'm close to it, Jalen. I've been thinking 44, 45. Remember, a couple of things. There's so many more possessions. They're like 11 possessions more per game. So many more possessions. And Michael didn't shoot the three because nobody shot the three. I mean, he made, I think, 19 threes in the seasons, two seasons, a total of 19, when he averaged 37 and 35 and a half. So, I mean, we saw that he could shoot the three. Later in his career, he started to shoot it, not to the volume, to the extent that they're shooting it today, but the increased threes, the pace of the game, that he was such a great defensive player. I'm up 44, 45 points at least. And by the way, Jalen, you know this. He wouldn't have had this now.
Yeah.
I mean, people forget. When they,
absolutely.
You know, Michael Jordan had to play with guys with this in his back essentially his entire career. So all that would have been removed. You add three-pointers, you add the pace of the game, and you're talking about quite a bit more scoring from the greatest scorer of all time, either Michael or Wilt.
I want to ask you guys two more things that I want to get in here. There's so much I could try and jam into this. So as we watched last week, Phil Jackson allowing Dennis Rodman to take a vacation during the season, as he did, and the other things we've seen from Phil. You know, I remember in the back when I was around those teams at those times, I think there were a lot of people who felt any coach might have won with a group of players that good. And then people said the same thing when he went to L.A. and he had Shaq and Kobe. If there's one thing that comes from this and watching some of the insides of it, I think I've developed a renewed respect for how hard the job was for Phil Jackson, how well he did it. Do you believe Phil Jackson, Michael Wilbon, does not get enough respect and credit for all the championships they won?
Well, he did at the time, I think, but now we don't take into account anything that happened before yesterday. And so everybody's a prisoner of the moment. Phil Jackson, Greeny, just the Rodman episode alone shows the sort of management superiority. And he had a tag team partner. I mean, he and Michael did that. Just think if that happens today, all right? And a player goes to a coach. Jalen, you know, if a player comes to a coach and says, I got to take a couple of days off to blow off some steam. First of all, the coach has got to tell his owner. The owner's got to tell the league. The league gets involved. And in Rodman's case, do they consider it behavior detrimental to the team or the league? Phil Jackson and Michael Jordan just managed this on their own. And they got Dennis back in the fold, and it meant, you know, Michael going ultimately to Dennis's place to say, no, you're going to get up and come to practice. The story is insane, but it illustrates, I think, guys, better than any story, the management of this. Phil Jackson had to manage a general manager who said to him on the eve of the season, you can go 82-0 and you're still not coming back. How would coaches handle that today with social media? I mean, Jerry Krause would have been fired. He would not be able to maintain his job in today's culture. But, yeah, I think that Phil Jackson, the way he got there, you saw Michael say on camera, I was not a Phil Jackson fan. Michael wanted Doug Collins to be his coach, and it's great to see him, you know, to sort of own that position and go back into real time and talk about how he felt. So Phil had so many big things, not minutes, not whose team is it, not shots. He had big fish to fry, and he got it done year after year after year with two franchises.
Right then, Jay.
Absolutely. And for everybody out there that want to dismiss the greatness of Phil Jackson, unfortunately for me, the Pacers were there in 98 when he won his final one with the Bulls, and we were there in 2000 when he won his first one with Shaq and Kobe. And all of those great players, all of those championships, you know who they won them with? Phil Jackson or Pat Riley, all of those players.
Yep.
You can look, there's a record with Phil Jackson on the sideline, and then there's a record without Phil Jackson and or Pat Riley on the sideline with all of those great players. So don't dismiss Phil Jackson. He went on to win five more championships after he left the Bulls. They never recovered since he did.
It's an excellent point. And quickly, while you brought up that 98 Pacers team, Michael, I know you had some thoughts on that.
Well, Jalen and I spent enough time together in the spring over the past, over many years, that we have gone over and dissected almost like possession by possession. The Pistons, obviously, the Bulls had to get through the Pistons, and going through that helped make them who they were, just like the Pistons going through the Celtics. And the Knicks obviously there were some great rivalry series in there over a period of years. I think the Bulls beat them four times. Jordan's Bulls beat them four times. Four different coaches, I think, as well. But those Pacers teams that Jalen was a member of with Reggie Miller, and that team came the closest to beating a championship Bulls team. Jalen, I don't know what the lead was in the fourth quarter. In my head, it was 7 points with about 3.5 minutes to play. Maybe I'm a little bit off. But I remember sitting in the United Center thinking, wow, this is the first time I've thought since they became champions that somebody was going to dethrone them. And that's totally overlooked. I can't believe those games aren't played. I'm tired of seeing San Antonio versus Miami in 2013 and 2014 on the replay. Give me some Pacers, Bulls. I mean, you guys weren't afraid of them, but it didn't have to be so physical. The state of Indiana, being the basketball-crazed place that it was, they knew how to treat Michael Jordan. They booed him. This wasn't like Madison Square Garden going to the world's most famous arena and being serenaded by a visiting audience. This wasn't that. And so I, as a Chicagoan, as a neighbor, and a person who's understood the rivalry between the two places, I loved those Pacers teams and the rivalry, the competition between those Bulls and Pacers.
And also, Greeny, I got my disdain and or rooting interest against Michael Jordan honest because I'm a Bad Boys fan. Like I told you, when they walked off and didn't shake the Bulls' hand, trust me, the entire state of Michigan was in that line with the Pistons. Don't ever get it twisted. And for people who see that footage and get upset at Isaiah, remember, Bird comes out and says, when we lost to the Lakers, I didn't shake their hand. I never did that. And so we knew that Michael was going for his second three-peat. Okay, so me just being a young player, just a bug on the windshield with all of these great historic figures, Phil Jackson, Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, Dennis Rodman, Larry Bird, Reggie Miller, Mark Jackson, Chris Mullin. I'm just like, wait a minute, we have a real chance to do something special. And for us to be up double figures early in the game, they put Pip on Mark Jackson and they interrupted our offense. They had an 8-point lead late, and then they had an 8-point lead late, and then we came back. But ultimately, it's about Tony Kukoc. He never gets discussed. The waiter, the initial stretch four that they had, he was a difference maker. He had 21 points in game seven. Him coming off the bench, I think Dennis Rodman gets some loose
guys,
ball.
Guys, hold on 1 second.
And kicking it to Steve Kerr for a three.
I have to take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll do much more of this. Michael's with us here for a little bit longer this morning. We'll talk more about this. Again, that was a legendary game, and Zach Lowe has a piece about that game right now on ESPN.com. But let me take a quick break, and we'll come back. We'll talk more about this. Michael Jordan and LeBron James, generational talents. What success would they have in other eras? That conversation is coming up. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Geico has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
Geico, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
As we have been discussing here on Get Up, the next two episodes of The Last Dance will debut on Sunday night. And Isaiah Thomas, who played a huge role in last weekend's episodes, had some interesting thoughts this week when he was comparing the NBA's current athletes to Michael Jordan. And in a conversation with Chris Broussard, this is what he said. He said, I think this generation is not getting enough credit for what they're doing because the athletes that are in this generation are so far superior than what was in my generation. Jordan was the best athlete we had ever seen. From an athletic standpoint, there were like 10 or 11 guys in the NBA right now with Jordan's athleticism. We didn't have that back then. With what he and LeBron are doing, Kevin Durant, with what Durant and LeBron are doing, if you put them back in the era of the 80s with their talent, their athleticism, and their skill, who's the GOAT? So this is where we want to pick up the conversation here. And no one in the world is happier right now than Marcus Spears, who told me he really wanted to get in with these guys, and we're delighted to have him in. But Wilbon, I'll give you the first word, because you said you called Isaiah to talk about those comments. What was your reaction to what he said?
I just said I started the conversation without even saying hello. And it's obviously he knew what was calling him. And I said, all right, we're going to start with me jumping on you about saying that those teams, those guys would be dominant in the 80s and the 90s. No, they wouldn't. And Isaiah sought to clarify one bit. He said he's talking about the bigs largely. And I understand that Kevin Durant and LeBron are just athletically better And we've evolved from what we had 20 and 30 years ago. I understand that. But I said to him, they wouldn't dominate the 80s and the 90s. They wouldn't beat the Pistons Bad Boys teams necessarily. They certainly wouldn't dominate. Could they win a series? Sure, maybe. But I said to Isaiah, there's not a guard right now who's athletically superior. A 6 foot guard. Isaiah's still the best guard of his size to me ever. And yes, I'm including the likes of Kyrie Irving and Allen Iverson. And we can go back and get a guy from his era, John Stockton. Isaiah was superior athletically and he'd be just as good athletically. So no, they're not dominating anybody in that era. Might they win a series? Sure. But I don't see them as being better. I don't know how Jalen feels about it.
Jalen, here's where I wanted to put the question to you, because you obviously played in that era. If you picked up Durant and put him in that era, and you picked up Jordan and put him in the present, which guy benefits more?
I think Jordan benefits more, because just think about it. Michael Wilbon and I are on TV saying that Michael Jordan would average at least 45 points per game. How outstanding would that be to watch on a nightly basis? A couple of words since this documentary has come out, I think, are kind of being used wrong. One is dominant. The other is greatness. To me, yes, you put KD and LeBron in any era. LeBron is the same size as Karl Malone. So I'll give him Karl Malone's points and LeBron James' rebounds. Still to be an all-time great player. Kevin Durant, I'll give him George Gervin-type buckets. He'll be scoring 35s. He'll be amazing. But when you say dominant, to me, that means basically having an opportunity to win a championship every year. What I saw from Magic Johnson, his first 10 years winning 5 championships after he just won one in college, to me, that's superior dominance. Michael Jordan winning 6 championships, the 6 seasons that he started in the 90s, that's dominance. From 2010 to 2019, LeBron has won 3 championships. That is dominance over his era. KD has won 2. That's dominance over his era. But it's not like teleporting them into the 80s and all of a sudden they're about to be winning the kind of championships that Magic and Bird won. I just don't see that happening that way.
Jump in here, Marcus. What do you want to say?
See, here's the problem that I have when we have these conversations about the individuals. Like, do we not take into account the rest of the dudes on the team? Like, when we talk about the Celtics, we say Larry Bird, but it was also Kevin McHale. It was also Robert Parrish. When we talk about the Lakers, it was also Kareem when Magic was there. It was also James Worthy. Like, there is this notion that these superstars that we talk about in any era didn't have players on their team to help them be dominant. KD and LeBron would be dominant in the 80s and 90s if they're surrounded by guys that played their role to the highest level like they did. When Dennis came over to Chicago, you don't think that helped make Jordan dominant to take things off of his plate? I just have an issue. We always have this era conversation. Man, if you can play basketball, you can play basketball. And then you have some guys that play this game way better than we've seen guys ever play it. I don't think those levels change based on the era that they're in. They adapt to the eras that they're in.
All right, the show's going to end. I got 2 minutes. Jalen, quick.
Okay, so you're saying that we shouldn't underestimate the fact that with the Lakers and Celtics, they had other great players on the squad, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Why did LeBron James leave Cleveland and why did KD leave OKC?
To play with better players.
Boom. These guys were able to bloom where they were planted, and they were so very dominant, the greatness was able to come.
Jay.
They were immersed in it. They didn't have to go find it. That's dominance.
I have 60 seconds left in the show. I got to give him to Wilbon. He got up early for us.
Go ahead, Wilby.
Let me just say this, Marcus. The key thing we're disagreeing on here is dominance. To dominate somebody means you're going to beat them all the time. They're not beating anybody all the time. They would get their share. They would have their share of winning. But to say that you're going to go out there and to dominate is what it was what Mike Tyson did to Michael Spinks. The word dominate. Ain't nobody doing that to those Pistons teams, to those Bulls teams, Celtics, Lakers, or to Jalen's Indiana team. Nobody's dominating them. They be in there getting theirs, but they're not having their day.
Mike and Jay, we got to stop acting like these individual guys wouldn't have a shot to do that in that era. That's
a shot,
the way
yes.
It was made. Yeah. That was the
a
way
shot,
it was done.
Yes.
The
last, every year a shot. Dominance?
I'm about to do the last thing on earth I want to do, but the show is going to end, whether we stop talking or not. Guys, I love you all for this. Thank you. Michael Wilbon, you are the best.
Thanks
have a wonderful weekend. Thank you, guys. Meanwhile, First Take is coming up next, even if we haven't stopped yelling at each other. And they will talk about LeBron's comments. And they will talk about Last Dance. And they will argue about all of it. It's Stephen A., Max and Company, coming up in just a few minutes, right here on ESPN.
A huge Monday morning on Get Up and First Take off episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance. Michael Jordan was runner-up as MVP in 1993 to Charles Barkley. Does Charles think MJ made him pay for that in the finals that year? We'll ask him on Get Up. Also, Magic Johnson joins First Take and reveals how being the leader of the Dream Team made Jordan an international icon. Charles Barkley on Get Up. Magic Johnson on First Take talking Michael Jordan. Monday morning on ESPN.
It is going to be a terrific day on Monday again. Looking forward to having Charles, and I can tell you in advance, he figures very prominently into the episodes that are coming up on Sunday night as they go back to that 93 season when Jordan's Bulls beat Barkley's Suns. This was a wonderful week. We thank you for getting up with us every single morning, and we will see you Monday. Enjoy the weekend. First Take starts now.